All right. So we're recording.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
Nice.
Welcome to Mysterium Pictorum episode. I don't actually know. Episode something. It's the live episode, and we are going to talk about Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau's Faust. Yeah, it's a very special episode. We are recording this live. We are all three of us together in the same room recording this for the very first time.
Yeah.
It's pandemic times. It's bad times for live podcasts, apparently. But we do have an audience, singular.
Yeah.
So nice to see you. All right. Let's see how much you will regret having shown up. But we're recording, and people will listen to this. This is going to be eternal. This is a podcast for the ages. I'm going to explain to you the concept of the podcast. So a couple of years ago, living in Spain, I once found a USB stick in like the catacombs of a small beach town. And this USB stick contained around 300 films from art house to weird, from I don't know
obscure
what I say,
to
obscure to notorious.
Yeah.
So it's basically art house and horror films, all very weird, most of them very interesting, some very significant. And during lockdown last year, we decided to sit down and watch all of them in an international podcast project. We asked our friend Yalın from Turkey to join us, and once a week we have this international Skype call, not Skype call, actually, we're using Studio Link, whatever, and we're talking about these films, and now we're doing it live, and it's going to be up on our feet at some point. I'm so behind with editing these.
37?
It's episode 37? It's
episode
37. We do our research while we record. This is as we always do it. It's the first time that I have no possibility to edit because before anybody listens. So that's a bit embarrassing. All right, let's start with the most important question. How did we like the movie?
Wait, who are you like?
Oh, we're doing that? Okay. all right, who are we? Nisan, who are you?
My name is Nisan. I'm a German-Turkish actress and filmmaker from Hamburg. I'm originally from Istanbul. And yeah, that's it. I'm 30 years old.
You keep saying that.
Happened this year to me.
Well, Yarın, who are you?
I'm Yarın. That's all you need to know.
Bam! And,
oh, and
I am...
We are revealing the mystery man, like, for the first time.
Yeah, only live. Like, when we publish the video, he will be pixelated.
It's going to be a video.
There's a camera right there.
Ah,
you're
cool.
A camera. There's a camera. There's a camera. There. Okay. And I am Lars Henriks, writer-director from Hamburg, Germany. Yeah, that's enough. How did we like the movie? Let's go straight into it. How did we like it? Nisan, how did you like Murnau's Faust?
I was really impressed with the effects and visuals in general. I thought it looked better than so many, you know, new movies. But I hated the story, and I'm really irritated by Murnau's misogyny.
Okay. Yeah, then how did you like it?
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
I was happy when the movie ended, but the visuals were great.
All right. I think I liked it most out of the three of us, but I'm a sucker for expressionist silent movies. I really liked it. I don't know why you guys didn't. It was entertaining.
Because
it was
a story about a serial rapist. And
that's the classic German legend of Faust. It's the most valuable story we have in this country. And yes, like the other big German epos about like the Nibelung is also about a serial rapist.
Sure.
To become a true German hero of the people, you need to be a rapist. That's very important. But apart from the rape. There've been a lot of fun things in this movie. Are you guys? I'm gonna get you to turn around on it. But now, how did we watch it? Is the traditional next question. We all watched it together for the first time in our home theater.
Because Yarın, the mystery man, is here extra for this festival on vacation from Istanbul, and he's staying with us.
I still think you should advertise the home theater as a gift
for people to come and sit and watch movies with us.
It's worth the travel.
Right, it's good. It's good. It was good.
Thank you.
So we watched it on a big screen as it should be watched. We watched it on YouTube actually. It's free on YouTube. There are three different versions. We watched one in high definition. There was a soundtrack that matched. I don't know if it was the best soundtrack.
I mean, the DVD version sounded more interesting at the beginning, but it didn't have subtitles, so...
We had a DVD, actually, but it didn't have English subtitles. I'm not sure if we would have needed them.
At some point, I was hooked with the YouTube version music, too.
I mean...
In the beginning, I was like, well...
That's always the thing with these silent films. Like, you can get different versions, and they all will have wildly different soundtracks, and I think that really makes a difference. I today had a look at one of the other versions, and it had a way better soundtrack, and like especially in the beginning, that made me understand scenes more, because it would kind of help the storytelling. There were people dancing, and it would play dance music, and I hadn't gotten that the first time around, because there was just dark and brooding music there. It's a shame, but it wasn't okay soundtrack. So you can watch this film on YouTube for free in good quality with a good soundtrack, and it was thoroughly enjoyable. So let me sum up the story. But before I do, come on, you guys. because I brought this tome, The Haunted Screen, by Lotte Eisner. It's the standard book about silent era, like about these expressionist films in Germany. I think it's the most interesting time of German filmmaking. It's when the foundation for most genres were laid in Germany. Mind-blowingly, like you wouldn't assume that looking at German films today. And Lotte Eisner, who left Germany, and I think she wrote this in France, she wrote this huge and great book about it. I think it's out of print. It's incredibly hard to get, incredibly expensive. And I'm just going to read her introduction to this film before I start summing it up, because I think she's doing a good job describing it. So, this film starts with the most remarkable and poignant images the German... This is a word I can't pronounce. I read this text before, but I didn't read it out loud, so I didn't understand. I didn't expect running into this problem. Chiaroscuro. She's very, very intelligent. She uses big words. This film starts with the most remarkable and poignant images the German chiaroscuro ever created. The chaotic density of the opening shots, the light dawning and the mists, the rays beaming through the opaque air, and the visual fugue which diapasons, what? Round the heavens are breathtaking. I'm going to stop reading this now because this is too smart for me to read it out loud. But I would suggest everybody reading it because it's a good book and it has nice pictures. Let's
and
now
you
switch
learn
to
new
my
words.
What?
And you learn
you
new words.
Learn new words. I have no idea what they mean. I'm now gonna read from my notes because these words are way simpler. So what is Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau's Faust actually about? In the beginning, we see Archangel Michael and Mephisto, demon Mephisto. They make a bet. It's much like the opening of the book of Job in the Bible. They make a bet about Faust. Faust is this old bearded guy. He's an alchemist, and the angel says to this demon figure, "You will never be able to tempt him because he's such a good man." And then the demon goes and tempts Faust, and if he manages it, I think he gets Earth or something. That's the wager. So the demon then goes, Mephisto then goes and makes the plague strike Faust's hometown, and Faust now has a desire to cure the plague. He can't come up with a cure. He tries something that he brewed together himself, but that just poisons the woman he gives it to. And then the next thing he comes up with, he summons a demon. Using this book, by the way, The Greater Key of Solomon, I have
it. We are thinking about
trying
summon
to
summon a demon like life.
Yeah, we thought we could do use this life format to actually summon Mephisto, but it's very, very complicated, and it's also lots of big words. Too smart for me. But he uses this book. I just wanted to say I have it. I have this book. Yeah, I have many books.
He likes bragging.
I like bragging. So where was I? then the next
it's
thing
the
he
first
he,
part of the story.
The next
and
thing
the
he
movie
thinks
has
of
has like 25 parts.
The next thing he can think of is summoning a demon, He does so once the demon appears. He's scared of him, runs away, but he can't. The demon has him trapped, and he offers him to sell his soul for just one day as a trial period, much like I don't know, a phone contract or something. Just one day as a trial period, and just think, just see how it goes. So Faust does that and is now able to cure the plague, which he does. He's not able, though, to look at a cross anymore, and this makes the townspeople who he just cured so angry that they try to stone him because they are terrible human beings, and he runs away. Then Mephisto says, I can make you young, to which he says yes, and then Mephisto shows him a naked woman, including boobs, unexpected boobs in this 1925 film. I didn't expect that.
Sort of.
Well, no, full-on boobs. She turned around. Like, first
it
there
was
were...
like the picture of... What's it called? Venus?
Yeah, but the hair moved. I paid attention.
Moving boobs.
Okay. Yes. I mean the hair was first covering the boobs, but then she was moving
like
her head.
But like in the picture, there's also a little boob.
Yeah, some boob.
It's kind of smart because it was a painting.
Yes, it was art. It was
Birth of Venus, I think?
Maybe. Artful boobs. So Mephisto shows Faust artful boobs, and now Faust is so horny that he wants to get to those artful boobs immediately, and Mephisto says, let's step on my coat and we'll go there. So they fly away to an Italian wedding. Like every Italian wedding, it's filled with huge elephants and it's splendid. Mephisto magically roofies the whole wedding assembly, and then they kidnap the roofied bride. She's still asleep, she's still unconscious, when Faust proceeds to rape her.
And then kill the groom.
And they kill the groom. Yeah, it's the whole thing. They are not good people. Our protagonist is an asshole.
More than an asshole.
Yeah,
but something is seriously wrong with him.
But shortly before Faust can proceed to go and rape the bride, he makes his deal with the devil final because the day is over, and he says, "Yeah, I wanna stay young a little longer because I have to rape this person now." So his soul is sold, and then they leave her behind and move on to new adventures.
Someday she will wake up. See, her
Maybe.
Wedding is ruined.
Yeah, that's the big tragedy of the day. So, yeah, that kind of ruins a wedding. You're right.
She won't notice.
We're only halfway through
that
the movie.
That storyline was really not necessary because it was over after 5 minutes.
Yeah, they drop it immediately.
And I don't understand why.
So, Faust wants to go home next. He wants to go home. And Mephisto brings him home, and then Faust sees a young girl and wants to fuck her. Mephisto is against that, but ultimately helps Faust achieve his goal. Faust just runs after her until he catches her, and that seals the deal somehow. Mephisto...
I also didn't understand why Mephisto was still...
Serving him.
Yeah, me neither.
He's also fucking with him on the side, so it's
yeah.
fun for
okay.
him.
Okay, right. I mean, because he's bored.
He was orchestrating his downfall. And speaking of Mephisto fucking with people, he sort of led on like an old woman. I didn't understand why he did that, just to have fun.
I think that woman was just horny and would do the same with anyone.
I thought she was a witch and selling roofies to...
She was. Yeah. Like after that young girl, Gretchen, got introduced, her brother, Shrek, went and bought roofies from said woman.
I forgot about the incest story.
Yeah, to roofie his sister. So whatever, shenanigans. Faust goes and fucks Gretchen. And Mephisto then tells Gretchen's brother Shrek. He looks like Shrek. He's actually called Valentin.
Shrek in human form.
So he tells Shrek to go home because his sister is in the process of being fucked. Shrek does so. There is a sword fight. Shrek dies. Gretchen's mother dies. Faust runs away. And then we cut to 1 year later.
The whole town is angry at her because she didn't want to... be with her brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
she cheated on her poor brother who already had bought the roofies. Then they put Gretchen in the stocks. They shame her. They hate her. We cut to a year later. Gretchen now has a baby from Faust, It's freezing cold. They don't let her in anywhere. They don't let her in anywhere. I usually cut out these parts. She desperately tries to get in somewhere to get her baby warm. Nobody wants to help her. Then her baby freezes to death. Then the people responsible come out, call her a murderess, and decide to burn her. This now, Faust somehow intuitively knows and tells Mephisto to bring him there, and he then bravely steps on the stake too, I guess, and dies with her. Yeah. So now he's dead. They're both dead. And Mephisto now claims his prize from the wager because he won, he thinks. But the angel says, no, you didn't, because... And this is... I'm not exaggerating. This is how he says it. The angel says, no, you didn't win, because love. And that's it. That's the end. Mm-hmm. That's the end. That's Faust by
Friedrich. That was when I got really tired.
Yeah, it was.
For that too.
Okay, so just on a story level, yes, I get the annoyance. Much of this, I think, is Goethe's responsibility. They did sort of like if we look at Goethe's Faust, I don't think it has the plague. I think Faust and Goethe's Faust just wants to fuck a 14-year-old. That's why he sells his soul. So the plague was a better thing, I think. Like curing the plague was the better motive to sell.
Why would you need to sell your soul to fuck a 14-year-old?
I don't know.
I don't remember that too. I only remember. I thought in the Goethe version, Gretchen made a pact with the devil.
No.
And let her mother die.
No.
Or something. Okay, maybe.
Did she?
Maybe she didn't talk about
stuff. Haven't read that in a while. Shouldn't talk about it. How awful were the people in the Faust town? Like, they consistently, like, as a mob, behaved reprehensibly. I kept waiting for someone to commit a massacre. Like, when they tried to stone Faust, why didn't anybody kill them? And then later on, when they burned Gretchen, why didn't anybody kill them?
Was that the same town?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was Faust's hometown.
Yeah, horrible. Horrible people.
Just fits the description of your and small towns.
Yeah, right. German small towns are like that. Yeah.
And I didn't feel like the writer or the filmmakers were commenting on that.
No, not at all. They were just.
They made it look like the
well, that's what happens. That's
Gretchen deserved it, or Faust deserved it.
Yeah.
At that point, he didn't deserve something like that yet.
Yeah.
He wasn't a serial rapist yet.
This was our third mono film. We've watched in this podcast Nosferatu. We've watched Sunrise, and now this one. Second mono horror film. Which one do you think is the better horror film? Nosferatu or this one?
I still wouldn't call this a horror film.
It's a horror film. It has a demon. A demon gets summoned, and then there are shenanigans, and people die.
Yeah, but demon is like Robin Williams from Aladdin, so...
Yeah, but there's more rape and murder than in Aladdin.
Sure. I mean, Aladdin also has rape and murder.
Yeah, the original version, maybe. The original version would be a horror film, too. Like, if you take out... No.
Let's just call it genre film before you discuss too long on this.
No. It's important to me that this is a horror film.
Why are you trying to stop us talking?
It has horror imagery. Like in the beginning, when
I agree, I also see it as a horror.
When they show, they have this Godzilla effect. They show the
like
town and Mephisto is behind that, and it's so
it
scary.
It doesn't have to be slasher or scare you just to call it a horror.
I mean, it starts big, but then it just becomes a spoof of itself.
Yeah, so that's your opinion. That's just like your opinion, man.
What was the guy's name? The demon acts like Laurel Hardy or Three Stooges in general.
He absolutely does, and I want to talk about that because I loved him. The actor was a fucking piece of shit, by the way. Gonna address that.
That one, I thought the Faust one.
No. The Faust one was
the Swedish
actor who died early.
Oh, okay. By
the way, that actor, the actor who plays young Faust, looked exactly like Beatrix von Storch.
And the angel, those were the same actors, right?
I don't know, maybe.
I think so.
Okay.
I think the devil made him look like the angel he had a
pact with. No. He made him look like himself when he was young.
But That was the same actor, like the angel.
Maybe. Let's talk about stuff we actually know. Let's talk about Mephisto. Because yes, Mephisto looked like the evil queen in Sleeping Beauty. Exactly like her. And like she has this very, very distinctive headdress. You know, you remember the headdress
Maleficent?
So this is on purpose. This is a visual reference that Disney clearly made to Murnau's Faust. Like it's very, very
interesting
obvious.
Interesting, because in Sleeping Beauty, they also get like rupees kind of magic stuff for young girls.
Yeah, see, so that's the first thing he clearly reminded us of. But the other thing was going by his eyebrows. Like the devil, when he first appears, he looks like a peasant, and then when he makes Faust young and beautiful, he makes himself fabulous. He wears a silk dress, he wears this headdress, and he wears heavy makeup, and he has these eyebrows. Like Divine in the John Waters movies. Like Divine is this legendary drag queen who for the first time would not emphasize looking like as realistically as possible like a woman, but she would exaggerate in a way that would purposefully make her look monstrous. And part of that was, for example, having these eyebrows that would go over her whole forehead. And I always thought she had invented that look, because I think she claimed to have invented that look.
But
Mephisto has that look in this movie.
Mephisto.
Yes, yes. And Mephisto also, like, he's a heavy set guy. He completely looks like Divine. Like, Waters should have remade this movie.
Mephisto is like was like a trendsetter for Disney villains and drag queens.
Yeah, and Murnau was an early John Waters. Like, the subject matter, too, would fit a John Waters movie. This was like Pink Flamingos.
Never seen a John Waters movie, that's why I can't say anything. I'm
Let
sorry.
Let me address the audience. Christian, story sounds like John Waters, right?
Yeah.
There it is. There you have it. Okay. So the actor was Emil Jannings. Actually, interesting guy. He's completely hamming it up in this film. He's completely playing this. I don't know, as flamboyant as he can. He's really funny. He's kind of charming. He was the first person to win an Oscar as best actor. Then he became a Hollywood star for a while. He had a contract with Paramount. That was all before the Second World War. While while all the good people left Germany after 32 to work in Hollywood, this fucker came back from Hollywood, abandoning a successful Hollywood career, to go to Germany to make propaganda movies, because he was such a convinced Nazi. After 45, the Allied forces then forbade him from working, which is good. But let me contrast that with another story of an actor in this movie.
That's so sad. I mean, not for him. I mean, in general.
It's about to get more sad. The Shrek guy. Okay? Shrek.
The incest brother.
That was William Dieterle. He was an actor who left Germany for Hollywood. He was an upstanding guy against the Nazis. He fought them all the way. He made movies against them in Hollywood. He got blacklisted for that by Hollywood, because they said, "Well, you were against the Nazis, which makes you a communist. You can't work here anymore."
What?
Yeah, no,
that's really stupid.
Yeah, it's terrible. So let's not talk him. Let's not call him Shrek anymore. That's just mean.
Both wrong to make propaganda for Nazis, but also to work actively against Nazis.
Yes, of course. Working actively against the Nazis obviously made you a communist.
But it was both wrong in Hollywood.
Yeah. He was also friends with Bertolt Brecht, who I think was one of the few people who went before the committee and actually said, "Yes, I'm a communist." So.
And he was also banished from Hollywood.
He left. So his whole deal was that he thought he was going to leave anyway, so he didn't have to cooperate with the committee, and he could just fuck them over. And he did a whole show. So they hated him, and then they hated his friends too.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Recht. I hear he's a good guy. I mean, not.
I heard that too.
I never heard he was a good guy, but he's like held in high regard, right? We don't have to fight for Brecht's honor.
No, but let's go to something.
The effects, the look in general, after these fascinating biographies. we briefly talked about that. The camera work, for example, when they flew over the world, when they flew to Italy. Mm-hmm. Did that not remind you of Lord of the Rings?
No.
Why not?
It didn't.
It had this boundlessly flying camera work.
It was obviously a tiny miniature town, and
it wasn't all the time.
Well, not all the time, sure. I mean, not that part, but the things you mentioned, Nisan, how the devil looks from the above to the town and stuff. Those were more impressive.
Those were amazing.
Or how he vanished with like smoke and stuff like that.
Yeah, they used good camera work.
They had many stage magic tricks too in this movie.
Yeah.
The devil used them all the time. That was great.
I'm not saying this for the first time during this podcast. I think those self-made effects look so much better. They're timeless. They really age well. Comparing to CGI effects.
I love the expressionist look in general. I don't know why nobody ever attempted to revive that.
We should do it.
People did attempt to revive that. I'm talking complete bullshit.
Yeah.
In
general, yes. Yeah. But yeah. But I rewatched Game of Thrones, I don't know, a couple months ago.
But that's not expressionistic at all.
No, but I mean, CGI-wise, it already looks old.
Yeah.
It's super fake. Yeah. It's been what, 2-3 years since it finished?
No, CGI is awful. And I think like if you go back to really old effects, some of them you could pull off now, like on a budget. I don't know if it's always cheaper to use CGI because it's so much work.
I would really like to, watch like a making of those kind of movies. I would like to see how they do those kind of effects. I would really like to. Do it in a movie once.
Practical effect.
But it's not an expressionistic silent film.
They're more charming.
I think the closest thing to making off to something like this is if you go to the Berlin Film Museum, they have like a model of a set. I forgot which one, but I think it's even a mono set. And it shows the whole studio. And apparently they had musicians on set who would do the music live, and because they could record while music was playing. And
cool. Where was the movie filmed? Do you know that?
No idea. Probably. I actually do know, at the UFA Studios. So that must have been Babelsberg then.
Oh, okay.
Close to Berlin. Yeah.
Maybe you can see the studios in Babelsberg. I don't know.
No. I've been in the Babelsberg Studios. You can see some old sets. They have like a park, but it goes only back until the 80s, I think. You could see, like, in the Berlin Museum, they did have props from Metropolis. That was amazing. And they showed some of the effects. UFA Atelier, yeah. In Berlin, yeah. So, they had the effect in this one too. Faust drew a circle around himself, and then there was this light coming up, all around him. The same effect is in Metropolis when,
I remember.
Yeah. So that effect was actually, shown in the Berlin Film Museum. Like, when I was a child visiting there. So when I was there last
many,
time.
Many, many years ago.
Many, many years ago, because I'm very, very old. When I was there last time, they didn't have it anymore, but I didn't understand how it worked, but they showed how it worked. So that's the closest thing to a making of. All stage magic. It's amazing. So let's talk about this. Did Murnau hate women?
I'm not sure if he hated women, because it didn't feel like he wrote that stuff on purpose to it didn't feel like personal hate, but he definitely didn't see women as people.
Interesting. Yaron?
I mean, coming from his previous movie
Sunrise. I mean, he made that after that, but Sunrise was bad. Yes.
I mean, also in this one, some woman gets raped by the devil possessed guy and then gets burned at the stake because of it.
What?
It always seems like when you compare Sunrise and this one, like these characters do really bad, evil things, but it feels like the filmmaker doesn't see it that way. It feels like, that's what you do. You see boobs, you rape them. Right?
So Sunrise is about a couple, A married couple. It's one of the first films to ever win the Oscar for best film. It's an American film by Murnau. The husband has an affair with another woman, and that other woman tells the husband to go and kill his wife, which he then proceeds to try and do. He doesn't manage to do it because
of the church.
Yeah, there's church bells, and then the two of them go and have a lovely day in the city, and then they go back and are a happy couple again.
And, wait, you forgot the other part. And so he couldn't kill his wife. He tries to kill his mistress then, because
a woman also gets away.
Has to be killed.
yeah. But nobody gets killed because he's weak. He's just a murderer.
No, someone stops him.
But, from killing the other woman?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so I'm hazy on Sunrise, but it's about...
Whatever.
It's about people trying to kill women and then them being good people. Like... this one man, him being good people. And Faust, again, he's doing these terrible things, and in the end he's redeemed by, I don't know, this angel going, there was love somewhere, apparently. So, is it Murnau, or is it...
I think everything happens so fast that it feels empty.
Does it happen fast? Like it's a two-hour movie?
No, but he sees the woman, falls in love immediately, tries to steal her.
He doesn't fall in love, he gets a boner.
Sure, that's the definition of love.
Yeah.
And then, you know...
Which is problematic.
Kidnaps her, starts kissing her, she resists at the beginning, and then she's in love too.
No, she just gives up.
But
I mean, she runs away, and he chases her. It's all really, really, really bad.
It's so weird that it's like shown as a romantic scene. And they even... She's even afraid of him. It's not like something I interpret.
No. She's in panic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then somehow she allows him back.
So it's incredibly problematic, but the movie doesn't seem to think that. The movie seems to say,
what I'm...
isn't it funny? Courtship. That's how it works. First they run away, then you chase them, then you get them.
Then
I don't
you
know. It's
knock them up and they freeze to death with their babies.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, Murnau himself was gay, so he apparently didn't do anything like this. But
he also wrote those movies.
He had screenwriters, but he did have input on what kind of thing he wanted to put on screen. Like he actually in Nosferatu, I guess he had the least input, because there was like Alban Graub behind that, who was an auteur producer in a way, and I think Nosferatu is his best thing. I don't know if I really like Murnau. I always just knew Nosferatu and thought I was a Murnau fan, but now having seen these other films. It's the character of the films. Like, the filmmaking is splendid. It's mind-blowing. It's fantastic. But the stories he decides to tell.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
Maybe that's what sold back then.
Yes, I was also going to ask, do we know other movies from that time to compare?
I mean, of course we do. For example, Metropolis. This film had lots of similarities with Metropolis. The way the woman gets introduced.
Metropolis was written by a woman.
Yes, by Thea von Harbou, member
of the Nazi
Party. She was a
Nazi, but still.
Yeah, and it had the same shallow declaration of love being the solution to everything in the end. I attribute that to fascism. I think that's a trait of fascist propaganda. And this now brings me to the topic I wanted to talk about most. So, Goethe's Faust.
Go ahead.
Clearly horror, whatever you say. The story is a story about summoning a demon and demon shenanigans. So Goethe's Faust, that's horror. And that's like a very German epic. It's like one of the German stories. Horror in general, like what we know as German horror, like it starts with German fairy tales, and then it really gets cemented in these expressionist silent movies. That's where we get modern horror from. After the First World War, that generation came back and they made these films, and it's mainly these three films. Like it's Caligari, it's Nosferatu, and then it's maybe The Golem and stuff like that. Like there were plenty of these films, and they are really the foundation of what we know as modern horror. So that's incredibly German. That grew out of a long German tradition. And I don't think that it's directly opposed to fascism. I think there is stuff in here that fascists could approve of. Like, for example, the view on gender. But then, like, in Nosferatu, we obviously have, like, an anti-Semitic caricature in this movie written by a Jew, but whatever, yeah? So there are elements in here that I think could be salvaged for fascist propaganda. Still, 1932, Germany stopped making horror films entirely, and it hasn't started again to this day. And it's not just Germany. Like, if we look at the Soviet Union, I don't know, 57 years, 15 countries, I think. Those numbers might be wrong, but something along those lines. And they only produced 2 horror films. So I think there's a correlation between states being repressive and having control over their film industry and them producing horror. So something about horror must bug fascists deeply.
I don't know, it doesn't make sense to me in general. Like, you need to have fear inside people. It would serve you.
I think it has to do something with the image, with an image to project to the rest of the world. Because that's actually something that after the war, Germans consciously said. They said, let's not produce those dark images anymore, because we as a nation, we have this violent and dark image now, and we don't want to have it. Let's project a lighter image. Let's not make scary pictures. Let's make...
They decided to make crimes all the time.
Yeah, for example, there's the police, a structural force for good that prevents bad things from happening.
I think,
by the way, there have been darker crime-centric movies in Germany before we started having having a federal film board. That kind of stuff got eradicated too. Like, as soon as the state really had major input in what got produced, that dark stuff doesn't get produced, because I think that's not an image that, in particular, Germany wanted to produce into the world and project into the world. And I guess the same applies to the Soviet Union. They were demonized everywhere, so they wouldn't want to show, well, it's beautiful here. Like, it didn't even start with horror. Like, we know that Kieślowski, whenever he made something, and that was not the Soviet Union, but that was communist Poland, and they also had film censorship, whenever he made movies about unionizing and about strikes, the government didn't approve of that, because it looked like Poland wasn't a workers' paradise. You know, I think it has to do something with projecting a perfect image of your country.
I think it's an interesting theory. I would also like to... I was just thinking, is it only about the film industry, but is it also an issue in German literature? Because you were talking about the classical German fairy tales, or even like I read some or heard of some German children horror stories, which horrified me. and Germans are always joking about it. Yes, our children's stories are so scary. And I was just thinking about it. Did that change too?
Yeah, because that's a phenomenon. Actually, you can see something very, very similar in the Victorian era, when it wasn't approved of in Victorian England to have like fanciful stories for grown-ups. That was the time when stuff got written like Peter Pan, which is a fantastical story, seemingly for children, but not really for children. And now, the magical, fantastical, or even horror stuff in German literature, that's children's books. We have one author who consistently writes commercially successful fantasy and horror. He's what's his name? Wolfgang Holbein. I don't think there's even one movie, for example, based on his books. It's not very approved of. We don't have much in terms of horror in literature either. But we do have those children's authors who are held in high regard, like Michael Ende, like Cornelia Funke, and their stories do tend to get dark. So yeah, I guess that's a side effect of that. Like, push that stuff out of grown-up entertainment and it will appear in children's entertainment.
Yeah, because that's interesting, because it's the same, I think, of with German movies too, because the only genre German movies I know from the last 30 years are made for children.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's the most interesting work that gets done in Germany at the moment. That's the more colorful movies. But you said that like Turkey had a horror wave 2010 to 2015.
I think maybe still do. But also they're mostly religious horror, like not like this one, like Faust, but you know, using a Ouija board and not being able to get rid of the ghost, etc.
But this was religious horror too. It was literally an archangel versus a demon, and the angel wanted his love.
There's a relationship between Faust and the Mephisto. In Turkish ones, they just try to fuck you over.
I mean, Mephisto did try to fuck Faust over.
Sure, it was like a comical relief in today's terms.
Okay. I mean...
Just because you don't take Faust seriously doesn't mean Murnau didn't take it seriously.
Do you know the movie V? It's on the USB stick too, and I've watched it several times already.
Yes.
It's one of the two Soviet horror films. Mm. And it's so funny, like in parts. It's so funny to me. And the end, I love it dearly. It's a fantastic movie. And I think everyone should watch it. It's like early Sam Raimi, like the camera stuff they do. It's fantastic. But it's so funny. And I thought it was supposed to be funny. And then I read reports from people who were there, for example, in Ukraine, where the story is set, when this came to cinemas. And they said, like, many people didn't dare to go to the cinema because this was, everybody told them this is such a scary movie, and people were running out of the cinema, and it was considered to be so scary. So I don't know, maybe our perception of horror, changes.
Yeah, our standards are higher now.
Yeah. It needs to go bang to be scary. That's more bass.
How do we solve this problem?
What problem?
That there are no horror movies anymore.
Let's look at Venezuela cinema and see if there's any horror movies.
Why?
For your theory that fascism doesn't produce horror movies.
Okay, let's do that. That's the solution. No, I really think before moving to a country, maybe look at the horror films. Look at the horror production. Are there horror films? Can you move there? Are there none?
Not only moving to another country, but we could really research that. And what countries, like just compare it to the last 30, 40, 50 years, whatever. And what countries there's a horror or genre scene commercially, not just, you know, underground, and in what countries there just aren't.
Yeah.
I think it would be an interesting research.
Like, was there a movement of democratization in Turkey between 2010 and 2015 that coincided with the horror wave?
No.
Was there really none?
None.
Are you sure?
We had the same government for the past 20 years.
But didn't the government then desperately try to get into the EU?
No, that was before 2010.
So maybe the structural changes that allowed horror to exist were made in those times.
Yeah, maybe with some sort of delay.
Yeah. Yeah, so we solved it.
We didn't solve it, but we found about it more.
Oh, Lars is right. Listen to your...
Yes. I'm afraid research will destroy my beautiful theory.
I really think it's an interesting theory.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I think horror is inherently anti-fascist, and whoever doesn't like horror films is a fascist.
Bam!
Yes. Okay, so I'm almost done with my notes. I can't read what this is supposed to mean. So let's.
Too fancy for you.
Yeah, my words are too fancy. I'm just a gibbering idiot. Yaren, you don't have a favorite quote, right? Because it's a silent movie.
I kind of do. My favorite quote is "Tin."
Because it means the end. And I don't even think it's that far.
It said something similar.
I think that's our movie.
That's German.
Ende.
Maybe that too, yeah.
Yeah, okay, your favorite word is Ende.
Because you were so happy that it was over.
Yeah.
Good. Why? It was such fun.
No, it wasn't.
It kept moving. It had all these interesting images, you
it
guys.
It kept introducing new things every 10 minutes.
You just don't like fairy tales.
No, it's a tiring movie.
We weren't raised with these horror German stories. Like, yeah. You were.
Why not?
We are not German.
Should have been. You would have become better people. What's our term of the week?
We were raised like also with Grimm tales, but like the American versions.
What's our term of the week? Term of the week that we can apply to this film and to others too.
I haven't thought about it. Huh.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
Expressionist cinema.
No.
Maybe unconscious misogyny.
Unconsciously rapey cinema.
I don't think it was unconscious at all.
Consciously rapey cinema.
I think it wasn't. It was unconscious that you shouldn't do that with people. At least that.
That too. Yeah, everything was justified.
Yeah. Okay. So morally corrupt. That's too broad. That's too broad. Morally corrupt. Morally unconscious. You know what? We don't have a term of the week.
What's the opposite of timeless? Timeful?
Cinema of its time. I think that's the lamest excuse for anything. Like you have to consider the times. You don't.
I didn't say you have to consider it. Like, ever. I criticized
cinema to be left in the past.
Let down cinema.
Maybe.
Okay, cinema of the past. Good. Good. That's that. That's it. Thank you for listening. That was the live podcast. I am so sorry you had to sit through this live recording, but I'm happy we could do this being in the same room together.
Yeah, it was the first time.
Plus, we have something to show. It did happen, even though pandemic and all of that stuff. So what are we watching next week, you guys? This is tradition. We have to talk about this. What's next on the USB stick for us?
I thought we were watching
Blast of Silence.
Alan Barron.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna watch Blast of Silence by Alan Barron, and that's we're also gonna record that in person, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah. Not live, not here.
Unfortunately.
Sorry, everyone. But yeah, that's it from my end. Jaren, did you have any more notes that we forgot to go over?
I just hope, like in Faust, we get our end of the pandemic orgy.
Yeah, okay. There was no end of pandemic orgy.
They sort of leaned towards it. I haven't actually seen the orgy, but it felt like everybody was happy dancing.
They had that in Belladonna of Sadness, right?
Yes. We talked about it then.
So I'm in Germany, close to where this was shot, and I think the movie in general reflects German culture, so I'm expecting my end of the pandemic orgy.
But we're not close to the end of the pandemic, so orgy is a few years.
We can start in
10 years or so.
We can start the orgy. It's okay, that's a thing from Belladonna of Sadness, in which there was a pandemic, and then the pandemic ended, and everyone had an orgy, and Jaren said that was apparently a medieval custom to have an orgy in the end of a pandemic,
of course,
like a nationwide orgy.
As you do.
Also,
as you do.
We also always discuss in the end why was this movie on this USB stick.
Okay.
Do you have any new ideas?
No. I don't know. How does it fit into the rest? Like, there were two more Murnau films, so apparently Murnau fan. I mean, these films are important in some way, right? Plus, it's also sort of esoteric. We have devil imagery. And you can play this film and not pay attention. You can play this film during a party.
Sure, yeah.
Which
maybe
also fits.
It would be even better if you don't pay attention.
If you don't pay attention.
If
it's just the images.
You just don't see the visuals.
Yeah, yeah. Good visual.
Plus, it had this, plus, okay, so to go back to the cult, we do think that a cult assembled this USB stick, a creepy cult, and that it's all part of a ritual to summon old gods. This film had a scene in which a demon was summoned, and they did use the actual book. This book that I have, The Greater Key of Solomon. I think they actually used the Lesser Key of Solomon, but whatever. I have one key of Solomon. Because I had a look, because we did want to summon the demon, and it seems to just say how to summon angels, which is boring. No, but they did go into the demon summoning thing. Mm-hmm. Plus, Murnau, he was associated with Albin Grau, who was a famous occultist. So this does have some sort of an occult background.
A cult.
Yeah, yeah. So it still fits the cult.
It's also still the most interesting theory. So,
yeah, yeah.
I thought maybe we could come up with some new theories.
Not on the spot.
Not with this movie.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. But I'm glad we watched it. I'm officially not a Murnau fan anymore.
Me too.
And I think we proved beyond any reasonable doubt that horror is inherently anti-fascist, and people who don't like horror films are fascists, correct?
Sure, we did.
So we should move to a country who has the most horror movies.
Well, that's the US.
Well, let's not get into that.
Okay. I mean, Britain has good horror movie production too.
I don't want to live in that weather in general.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't get worse.
We already do.
Yeah, yeah, so... No. Okay.
Anyway.
Anyway, that's that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.